Regulated and Relational, the bi-monthly podcast produced by the Attachment and Trauma Network. Ever wonder which events are traumatizing and which ones aren't? Or why two children in the same family seem to have different levels of trauma? Julie and Ginger are discussing in today's episode, My Trauma Isn't Your Trauma. It should be an enlightening session. Let's join them.
And welcome back to Regulated and Relational, our podcast produced by the Attachment and Trauma Network. I'm Ginger Healy.
And I'm Julie Beam.
And we're excited to share with you from both our personal experiences and our professional knowledge what it truly means to be attachment-focused, trauma-informed, and how we can help children impacted by early childhood trauma. So today, we're going to go back and talk about something that's very basic to becoming trauma-informed. It is basic, but it is not simple. And because of that, we want to make sure that all of you out there on this trauma-informed journey with us understand that determining if something is traumatizing is not decided by the event itself or whether we agree as adults or society that it should be traumatizing. In fact, SAMHSA, S-A-M-H-S-A, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, has made this a core part of their definition of trauma and what it means to provide trauma-informed care. And that's the concept they call the three E's. And so let me read that to you. Individual trauma results from an event or series of events or set of circumstances that is experienced by an individual as physically or emotionally harmful or life-threatening, and that has a lasting adverse effect on the individual's functioning and mental, physical, social, emotional, or spiritual well-being.
The three E's are event, experience, effect.
Yeah.
An event happens, or a series of events, or a set of circumstances, and that alone doesn't mean that you have a trauma. And it's kind of hard for us to wrap our heads around that, because even when we're thinking about things we know to be highly traumatizing, like child abuse or witnessing domestic violence or those kinds of things, not everybody who has had that event happen to them, it won't qualify as trauma, because it's not the event itself that makes that happen. It has a whole lot to do with how you experience that, what your own body, brain, person experiences that as, whether it was physically or emotionally harmful, or if it felt life-threatening, and even beyond that, to what kind of lasting adversity does it have on the way that you function? Like Ginger said, it's a basic concept, but it's not simple.
I think really what is important to point out here is that it is individualized.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is going to be different. There's not, you know, right, like a comparison. Right. Yeah.
So the experience of that event, there are some things we can talk about that make it more likely that an event will be a traumatizing one. And that's in how people experience that event. And we look at Dr. Bruce Perry's definition of trauma. And I don't have it written down here, so I won't quote it exactly. But the thing that's important about the definition that he provides is he talks about the loss of control. The feelings of fear, terror, and helplessness are the words that are in that definition. And that has a lot to do with whether we experience something as being traumatizing or not. If we're not afraid of it, and if we don't feel helpless or like it's out of our control, we have a less likelihood that it's going to have a longer impact on us, right?
And that overwhelm that you mentioned, that overwhelms our ability to handle or cope, that is often associated with trauma definitions. Dr. Mm-hmm. Gabor Mate tells us that trauma is what happens inside of us as a result of what happened to us. So not exactly what happened to us, but the resulting and activation of our nervous system. And he says that trauma can even separate us from our bodies. But he also says, and this is what I also like to point out, is that he is not saying that that means that trauma will limit you or constrict you, diminish your capacity to think, feel, or trust, or assert yourself, to experience suffering without succumbing to despair or to witness with.
Yeah. And so some of the other ways that you experience it depends so much on your age and stage of development. And I know when we get to talking about examples of this, we are going to drive home the point that the younger you are, the greater potential an event that you experience with fear is going to have an impact on you in an adverse effect. Other stressors that are going on around you in your overall mindset, if you've already got several other stressors that you're living with or dealing with, especially circumstances that are chronic or ongoing, that weakens your ability to not experience that in a more harmful way. Who is with you, who's around you, who's there to support you, that's a huge thing. What the others around you did when the event occurred can have a big impact. And in a stressful event, your nervous system is likely to experience the dysregulation, the hypo or hyper arousal, your fight, flight, or freeze will be activated. You know, then what happens next is really, really important, you know, in terms of whether that just is an experience or whether it becomes an adverse effect, right? Was your nervous system able to re-regulate with somebody or even on your own, or do you carry that beyond the event? The best example that I have is an example of me. I mean, that's a good story, right? To tell your own story about this, mostly because it happened, you know, as I was getting involved with ATN and learning some of this myself, and it was such a clear example of a traumatizing event that I'm still learning from it, actually. So I was working on a contract work with a bunch of folks for the Department of Ed, and we were in a car together. We'd been at a school site all day, and it was time for dinner, and we were in my car. There were five of us headed to dinner. And we were sitting on this street, you know, that was sort of clogged by traffic, and we were stopped at the bottom of this hill. And there was a light behind us at the top of the hill. And the young folks that were in the car ran through the light. They tried to beat the light, the yellow light. And as they were, you know, coming down the hill, there was no way that they had time to stop before they hit us. For whatever reason, I looked up in my rearview mirror and saw that happening. So without really even thinking, I put both feet on the brake, you know, like just as hard as I could. And apparently I yelled. I mean, everybody else in the car was also on alert because I made some kind of a noise. I mean, we hit the people in front of us, but you know, like there wasn't a huge accordion thing. But because I had seen it coming, my brain and nervous system just, yeah, experienced this as a highly traumatic event. I was helpless to do anything more than I had done, put my feet on the brakes, right? And what happened next, nobody was severely hurt. One of the women in the back of my car ended up having to get some treatment, but the ambulance that was called, you know, checked us all out, and we didn't go in the ambulance or anything. And even the young couple that hit us and their airbags deployed, they didn't go in the ambulance either. Nothing hugely significant physically was happening to anybody. So after a while, and my car was still drivable, just pretty damaged. The trunk was all squished up. We went on to dinner. And I don't really remember driving to dinner, but I do remember sitting at dinner. And it was as if everybody around the table was in a tunnel, you know, across the restaurant from me. I could barely hear them. It's like they were talking to me and they were saying things like, you should probably call your husband and tell him, you know, that we had this accident. And I remember taking my phone out and not knowing how to work the phone. Then I started shaking, like uncontrollably shaking. And the women at dinner, they're like, are you feeling okay? Are you hot? Are you cold? Because I was also perspiring. So I was having this physiological reaction to the event, to the experience, and to that experience of feeling helpless. And I didn't know what it was, and neither did they really. I mean, none of us were experts in trauma. I was very much studying this and learning it, but not there yet. And I just remember thinking, this is so weird. And like, why can't I think? And why can't I figure out how to work my phone? So somebody's like dialing my husband for me and all of these things. And then for the next couple of months before I actually did something about it, I would have such bad episodes. If I was driving in the car and I came up to a stoplight, I would obsessively start looking in the rearview mirror. And if anybody came up behind me and stopped quickly, and let me tell you, most people do come up behind you and stop pretty quickly, I would break out into a sweat or I would have to hyperventilate. And my daughter was in therapy at the time. And I was just like, I think there's just something really wrong. And so I was just mentioning it to the therapist and she goes, yeah, you need some EMDR. And so I did that and we were able to resolve it. And not that EMDR is always the resolution there, but it was truly trauma, right? It was truly a traumatizing event. And then of course, at first I was pretty sheepish about that. I'm like, well, I'm a pretty put together person and I think I'm pretty strong and yada, yada. And what is this? And then I was like, it's the stuff you're learning about, Julie. It's your body's and your nervous system's response to seeing this event unfold and know that you were helpless to do anything about it. And this is happening to you. And it's been a good reminder to me that that's what it feels like and has given me a lot more empathy for folks that I know are going through that adverse effect, beyond the event or the experience.
Right. It's interesting you say empathy because not everyone is going to have that same exact thing, but you have empathy for what you said, that effect, what was going on inside me. That was so real.
Yes. I couldn't stop it. I couldn't stop shaking. I couldn't make myself think. Couldn't remember my husband's phone number. Couldn't remember how to operate the phone. I mean, I was just, as they say, I was a hot mess. And then it went one step beyond that and didn't go away. It became something that was interfering with my life in that adverse effect, in terms of making it hard for me to drive without, experiencing a lot of, dysregulation from being obsessive to, watching other cars stop around me. Yeah, it was not, it wasn't good. And then I was thinking about this episode and sort of juxtaposed that with an event that I had several years later, where I fell in my garage and broke my knee. I was loading up the car to get where we needed to get that day, and I had left my purse back inside the house. So I turned around to come back inside and I tripped over some building material that was stacked in the garage. We had been doing some renovations, and next thing I knew, I was on the ground and my knee was broken, and I'd never broken a bone before. And it was not a cakewalk, but eventually I called my husband and called a neighbor and then eventually called the ambulance because nobody could get me up and we had to go to the hospital, all of those things. But for reasons that I can't totally explain, my nervous system did not process that event as traumatically. There wasn't as much trauma to that. I guess I didn't feel as helpless because I had access to get to the people to help me. And my nervous system did not respond with the same kinds of physiological things that it did. I mean, obviously, I was in a lot of pain and there was a lot of rehab and it was a slow process, but I don't have adverse impacts from that. I don't have specific fears of falling. I don't have a fear of my garage. There's no markers of, okay, I know that I'm afraid of this now because of that accident. It was a totally different event. And either one of those events could have been traumatizing to an individual or not. But for me, one was and one wasn't.
And I think that this parsing it out is really, it's impactful to really talk about that, to understand that. I wanted to share an experience that I had this week with a mom that I was on the phone with. She was seeking help and she told me a story about her son who is a teenager and that he was having a lot of concerns and problems and anxiety and depression and nightmares. And she finally kind of figured out that it was coming from an experience that she and he had together years earlier, where they both came upon an accident and saw everything happen. And it was a very severe, traumatizing accident. And I can use the word traumatizing now because those are her words that she said she didn't use before she kind of figured all of this out. Mm-hmm. She used to say, we came upon this accident, because she provided first aid and she walked away from that accident saying, wow, that happened. Mm-hmm. But her son, she was realizing, was still having nightmares about it. And she said to me, that accident didn't happen to him. He was not physically a part of the accident. So I didn't equate that with him for a long time. And so the other thing she said to me was that when this boy started to be able to vocalize to her what the nightmares were about, it centered on this accident. And so that's how she started kind of putting the pieces together. But she didn't herself, you know, she said to me, I didn't think it was traumatic because I didn't feel like it was traumatic. I didn't think it was traumatic for him because when it happened years ago, it happened a long time ago. He was very young. He was not involved. That's how she was interpreting what could or should or would be traumatic. And so right. Once she really sat down with him and was able to talk to him about what he feels like when he thinks about it, or what happens inside of him, how he freezes, how he has nightmares, how he has anxiety, she realized that that event impacted him quite differently than it impacted her. And we talked about how there is a myth out there that, oh, they're too young to remember, or it happened so long ago that time will heal that, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted to make the point that for those two individuals, the mom and the son, they experienced what you could say was the same event, but they experienced it very differently and had effects that were very different as yes. well.
Great example. You know, the whole idea that you're too young to remember, and also that yeah. because it didn't really happen to you, because the child wasn't really taking any action in that event, right? That you somehow didn't experience it. And that we know is not true either.
Yeah.
The missing of an event can easily become the trauma. So that's why we call this episode, Your Trauma is Not My Trauma, right?
Yeah.
And why we often say at ATN that nobody gets to pick their traumas, because even while you're having a traumatic response to something and it becomes an adverse effect and lives on in your life, it's not like you chose that event to be more traumatizing to you than something else, right? It's your nervous system's response. And while we have an increasing understanding of how our nervous systems respond to traumatic stress, you know, there are so many factors that are either risk factors and increase the likelihood that you're going to experience trauma, or are protective factors and decrease the likelihood of the trauma, that there's no way to predict it. And we can't
right.
really predict how each individual is going to respond, which is why when you hear stories about somebody who grew up in a really significantly deprived sort of situation where there was neglect or there was a dangerous neighborhood, and you're thinking, how did they come out of that without very much trauma effect? Well, there's a lot of potential protective factors around that, and vice versa. How did one, what looks like innocent event, you know, like something that to a lot of people is no big deal, impact somebody so significantly? Our nervous systems are all different, and the factors surrounding them are different.
And I think that it's just so important for us to sit with that, because oftentimes people get shamed for an experience they had that they experience as traumatic, but people are like, well, that was no big deal, or get over that, or pick mm-hmm. yourself up, or move on. If I hear that, you know, one more time, where they are not ready to, and they need help to, You know, we don't pick and choose our trauma, and we don't judge or pick and choose other
Right.
people.
I can't imagine during that accident, if somebody had said to me that I needed to move on from that, which I'm guessing some people might have been thinking, or like, why was that such a big deal? People have, accidents all the time. It wasn't that I was not trying to move on. I just
Oh.
couldn't. It was definitely my nervous system was not able to, make sense of that. So then obviously there are risk factors, and some of them are the age and stage of development of the person. And we can't emphasize enough at ATN that the earlier that you're exposed to a traumatic event, the greater the potential of that traumatic event's impact on you. It's not a too young to remember sort of thing, because we're talking about your nervous system and your body's response to those things, not your memories and your language centers and your thinking brain's response. So if your thinking brain is not, online and functioning as a more mature thinking brain, it is actually more significant that a traumatic event impacts you, in a bigger way, because you then don't even have the language and the thought process to make sense out of what's happening. And so that's a lot of times gets buried even deeper and ends up with much more of an adverse effect to you.
Yeah, especially when we're talking about children whose brains are developing in that mid, limbic system where memories are formed and all of that. There's just so much there.
There's so much there. Well, and the interesting thing is that we have to also remember that there is a genetic component to this. And the folks at Harvard tell us that. And we're getting more and more research about that, that there's genetic, some people call it your temperament. Some people express it in an epigenetic sort of way where things get turned on and turned off. Those are two different things. But the truth is that two children in the very same situation, in the very same household, experiencing the very same thing, could have very different outcomes that have to be highly attributed to genetically. One of them has got a temperament that allows them to build resilience easier than the other one. Their nervous system just wasn't as impacted because of the person that they are. So we can't totally discount genetics either. The similar events that have happened in the past, the more chronic that things are, the more that similar things occur to you, the more that you witness violence in the street and in your neighborhood and all those things, the more likely it is that that is going to become something that ends up having an adverse effect on you, right? The lack of safe bases of relationships of people around you that you can turn to, even the lack of the presence of other people with you when something occurs is a huge thing, right?
Yeah, we have done entire podcast episodes on safe base, felt safety, the importance of relationships. So that's a big one.
And other stressors occurring at the same time. I mean, if your stress level is already high, even if it's still tolerable, if you think about that whole window of tolerance thing, a stressful, toxic event can become traumatic. Just like at the saying, the straw that breaks the camel's back. It was just too much. The lack of awareness in other people around you that you've experienced trauma often compounds it, right? That's a more risk factor if people don't recognize it. And if the event occurs in a situation where that community or your race or culture are already under stress, are already historically traumatized, historically impacted, that makes it worse. That makes it more likely that an event is going to have a negative impact on your nervous system. It just
does. Yeah, so true. And then, of course, on the flip side of that are these protective factors. And I always love to talk about this. I don't think we can talk about this enough, but it makes such a difference when we talk about buffering stress and it being something traumatizing. So if we're talking about resilience and how to navigate hardships, trials, stress, and all of that, if a person already kind of has that established resilience, that strong baseline, then that person has a higher level, a higher ability to be able to handle that event that experience and the effects that come after. So we know how to build resilience. It's through relationship. And so another protective factor is exactly that. It's safe relationship. It's that support system. It's being surrounded by people who can buffer and shield you and protect you from that. And I love that it doesn't have to be a million people. It can be one. Attuned, more safe bases, more relationships is also going to help that. And then, of course, another protective factor is that opportunity to process what happened. And, you know, you said, Julie, when you were talking about your experience, that you had this moment of, what's wrong with me? I'm a strong person. I should be able to handle this, right? So oftentimes I do think that we avoid or deny or put it aside or bury it. But what we're talking about here is being able to talk about it and process it and work through it.
Right.
That's a huge protective factor in whether that event becomes a traumatic event or re-traumatizes. So, and the last protective factor that we wanted to touch on is community support and how important it is to be surrounded, not just, you know, in your small bubble, but in that larger whole, especially if we're talking about situations like historical, cultural, racial trauma. If you're looking at the reverse of that or the opposite of that, it is being surrounded by community support.
Right. And the stronger that community support is, because when we're thinking about children and little children, is that they might not tell their parent for whatever reason, or the person that you would expect them to tell, but they might tell a trusted neighbor or extended family member or a teacher or any number of folks that are in their community if they feel safe and supported in that way. And the wider that that community net is of safety,
yes,
the more protective factor that we all have, actually.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I don't think we will ever stop preaching about the value of the relationship between a teacher and a student and how healing that can be. And it can look like a coach and it can look like so many things. So, yep, that community care, that's huge.
So the last thing I wanted to talk about was the fact that we're hearing the word, I've been traumatized, or this is so traumatizing, so much more in today's culture. And, you know, there's a part of me that goes, yeah, there's a part of me that goes, "Og," every time that that happens, right? I'm glad, because there have been so many years through the life of my involvement with the Attachment and Trauma Network and the help that we've needed for our family, that early childhood trauma has not been recognized. So now it's like, okay, great. Folks are catching on to what it means to experience trauma, to have these three E's in terms of event, experience, and effect. But just like all good public awareness things that happen, sometimes we take it a little bit far, right? On the other hand, were you really traumatized when you couldn't find what it was you were shopping for, or when somebody was kind of rude and dismissive to you? Like, is that really the right word to describe the emotional impact of what just happened to you? Or was it more that you were disappointed or frustrated or impatient, or maybe even you were actually dysregulated, like it went that far and you had some toxic stress? But as we talked about in the three E's, was that really trauma? Was it, you know, something that was quickly resolved? The danger of using that word in such a casual way is that it takes away from the seriousness of people impacted by trauma.
It actually decreases the meaning and the value, the validity of it. And the big thing here that I think is important to talk about is our words and our emotions and everything, it shapes our response. So, you know, how are we going to respond to a child or to a friend or to a colleague, or how are we going to be responded to in our moments? Based on words. Words have meaning. And so parsing it out, I think, is really, really important.
I guess I would encourage that when you hear people use trauma in that way, that this, you know, oh my gosh, this happened and it was so traumatizing, that you might offer up other words.
I was going to say, in fact, Gabramate says, things happen that are upsetting or distressing or painful. We are not invalidating that, but that does not mean that it is traumatic. And
right.
So
words matter. And we can say, you know, I was so upset or I was distressed when this happened. And that sounds significant, and that the folks that are your support system want to support you in that distress without having to take it all the way to traumatizing, if it truly isn't traumatizing. So that's why you need to know what is and what isn't, right?
Yeah, the response is everything, because, you know, that's exactly what we do here at ATN. We refer people to resources, and you've got to know which resources will help. What's the appropriate response?
Well, thank you all for listening to this today. I hope that this helped. It was one of the areas that, as we were thinking about what folks did or didn't know about trauma and being trauma-informed, that we wanted to make sure we spent an episode to clarify it, just because it's important. It's important that we all understand that your trauma is not my trauma, and that nobody gets to pick their trauma or what should be traumatizing to other people. Thanks for listening.
This has been another episode of Regulated and Relational. Next time, Ginger and Julie will be joined by Rabbi Heather Altman, who will explore both yoga and somatic experiences. A special thanks to our editor, Lorraine Schneider, and to Joe Kramer for donating our music. For more information about the Attachment and Trauma Network, visit our website at attachtrauma.org. Show notes and upcoming episodes will be available on our website and through anchor.fm. I'm Rebecca Drumstep. Thanks for listening.